Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ, a podcast about everyday life from the spiritual, the physical, and the metaphysical perspective. Each week, I'll bring you episodes that have a casual, laid-back, informal, and spontaneous look at this thing we call life. I'm Sunny Dawn Johnston. Now let's get started. Hello, 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 my friends. Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ. That is me here today on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon, getting the opportunity to do a live off the cuff. So come on in and join me. I've got a beautiful guest that I know you're going to love that's going to create some insight and awareness for you in a variety of different ways, but on the topic of healing and moving from trauma to truth. And really, we're going to talk probably about relationships because it's been the conversation that has been coming up a lot. And so we'll dive into not only your relationships with other people. That's where it usually is the easiest to see, right? That's the reflection for you. So you can see what's going on outside of you to know what's actually going on inside of you. So we're gonna deep dive into both of those areas. So come on in, friends, and say hello. Let me know you're with me and you can hear me and see me. And we will bring Kate on in just a couple of minutes. Hello, hello. Hey, Rachel, good to see you. Hi, Cindy. Hey, Kathy. Hello, Rhonda. Good to see you, my friend. Hi, Debbie. Hello, Michelle. Yes, great to see you. Thank you. It's a beautiful day for sure. Hi, Patty. Awesome. I'm happy you're here, my friend. Hello, Denise. Hi, Kathy from Florida. Love it. Hello, Thomas. Hey, Deborah. Hi, Kathy and Peggy. Good to see you, sister. Hi, Doris. Seeing me and hearing me. It looks like we're working. Awesome, friends. All right. Well, so today we are going to be talking to Kate Shipp, and I'm going to just bring her on real quick here. Hang tight. Hello, sister.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
This is Kate Shipp, my friends. I want to just do a little introduction and read her bio so you know a little bit more about her and who she is and why we're talking to her today. And then we're just going to jump in. As you guys know, this is off the cuff. Nothing is scripted. We have nothing planned. We have a couple of questions that maybe we'll do, maybe we won't, because that's how I like it. It's just easier that way. So, all right, guys. So Kate Shipp, an international best-selling author and Christ-centered yoga therapist. That is the title that she goes by. So her bio is, she is a Christ-centered yoga therapist certified with the International Association of Yoga Therapy. She holds a BS in marketing from Arizona State University and has thousands of hours in training and personal experience in various holistic therapies. For the past decade, Kate has specialized in seeing clients for mental health and trauma recovery. She uses the teachings of Jesus and the philosophy and practices of yoga combined with the neuroscience of trauma to help clients overcome painful pasts, remember their wholeness, and live a life of peace and joy. She is the international best-selling author of her memoir of recovery from complex PTSD, I Am Strong Enough Now, God, Thanks, My Journey from Trauma to Truth. Welcome, my friend. Happy to have you here today.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. That was a mouthful. Gosh.
I know, isn't it? It's always interesting.
It's weird to hear people read your bio.
I know. I'm always like, all right, come on, come on, come on, come on.
Yeah, I'm like, gosh, like.
Get used to it, girl. It's going to happen forever.
I'm blushing over it. Like, gosh, it's weird. Hi, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a little uncomfortable initially, but, you know, it's all true, so.
It's all true.
It's all true. Yeah. So as I was just reading that, Kate, what I thought we could start with, because I do think that there are a lot of people that don't even recognize what trauma is. Like, mm-hmm. I think that oftentimes people are like, yeah, my dad was an asshole, you know, and they don't realize, no, that wasn't just a personality defect. Like that was a whole nother thing. And so could you share with us what trauma is, and for people that maybe don't know, how to be able to discern between maybe an experience that you've had, because people are always, even though it's not healthy, people always compare and they're like, well, mine wasn't as bad as that. So then it's not, you know, they minimize things. So what would you, how would you say, and what would you express and explain to people that trauma is?
I define trauma as unprocessed emotional experiences from our past, in meaning that the trauma is not the event that happened. It's the unresolved emotions because of the event that happened that lives in your body as stuck energy. So this is why so many people can go through the same event and some will have trauma and some won't.
Yes.
And a lot of that has to do with our capacity for inner resourcing. Do we have the skills developed to process emotions? Number one, Do we know how to seek support that we need if we can't process it for ourselves? And do we have the capacity to stay present during the traumatic event to not disconnect from ourselves? Mm-hmm. And so there is a complete misunderstanding of what trauma is. I think we're broadening that understanding right now because there's so much of it. But I do agree that a lot of people hear the word and they don't want to associate with the word.
Yes.
And they don't really understand that falling off your bike as a little kid and cutting your knee and crying and your parent telling you, get back up, get back on, don't be such a baby, could be a trauma for someone.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And that same exact experience for someone else could not even be a memory.
It could have been the memory that made them feel like they could be competent to get back up. Right. So it's our perception of the events and the emotions that we experience through them have a lot to do with whether it was a trauma or not.
I love that definition. I really think that's one of the best definitions I've heard. So it's not, trauma is not about the event. Mm-hmm. It's about the unprocessed emotions that are connected to the events.
Yes.
That is, I think that opens a door. And I think it also, like, there's relief in that, like, oh, okay, well, that's why I kind of feel this way, but then I don't want to make it this big deal. You know, there's all that internal judgment and criticism that we have that I think that eases it right there. It's just unprocessed emotions. Okay,
cool. And that's why we get triggered so often, is because our emotions get activated all the time. Mm-hmm. And we're like, why am I so anxious over something where I use this example of, like, if you're out to lunch with your girlfriends or your guy friends or whomever, friends, and you're having a great time, and then all of a sudden you find yourself really anxious and the emotion doesn't meet the situation. Mm-hmm. Right? That's usually some sort of unprocessed emotional energy that's being activated by something in the environment that you're unaware of.
Right.
So maybe it was the perfume that the waitress was wearing. Mm-hmm. Right. Maybe it was someone that walked in that reminded you energetically of someone from your past where you weren't safe. And you have no consciousness around this, but your nervous system has the consciousness, even if you don't.
Yes.
So it's reading it all the time.
It's creating the awareness for you too. Hey, by the way, you got a little unprocessed emotions here. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. Not you're a terrible person. Not there's something wrong with you. Just you've got some unprocessed emotions. And when you're ready, I'm right here. I'll just hang out. Yeah.
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 My students started referring to me about 4 years ago as the trigger hunter. And I love that term because when I find myself getting triggered, I know that there's so much wisdom and healing available. Mm-hmm. And so instead of avoiding it, when it does happen, I'm curious about it.
Yes.
What is this really about for me?
Yeah.
You know, what is unresolved here that I now have an opportunity to overcome and heal?
Yes. Yes. I love trigger hunter's great. I love triggers because it's always representative of something that is inside of me that is holding energy that if I have the trigger, then I can discover what it is and it can free me up to live either a more harmonious, joyful, happy, excited, passionate, whatever word you want to feel, life. And it's really there to help me uncover. So the trigger is the blessing if we're willing to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we're willing to
do that. You do this really well, and yoga therapy teaches this. We don't need to know the story. Mm-hmm. And I find that so many people get stuck in the story. Well, what is this about and why did it happen? Instead of the energies presenting as emotion or sensation, because it just needs to move and be resolved. We don't have to regress and re-experience anything.
Right. Yeah. So often I think that's why people keep it down, is because they feel like, oh, I don't want to go there. You know, it's like, oh, you don't have to actually go there. You've already been there. All you have to do is let the energy move through you and be able to acknowledge what it is. And then it literally can clear if you allow it with just the awareness of it. That's such a gift. And I love that you said that, because I think that's why so many people don't deal with it, is because they're afraid they're gonna have to go into it and dig into it and feel all. It's like, no, it's just energy that's just saying, hey, I just need a little help moving through. And I liked what you said, get curious. So my term, what I do is, isn't it interesting? I just look at it from, isn't it interesting that I am responding this way right now? You know, like, huh, that's interesting that I feel like I want to bite this person's head off. That's interesting. Let's see what that's about, versus that judgment and that criticism and on the other side of it, the stories we tell mm-hmm. about the other person, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh, okay. So they just triggered me. So let me tell a story about them. And then I don't have to pay attention to me.
Yes. And you speak, and you, when you opened today, you talked about, we're going to discuss relationships. What's one of the number one things that causes people to feel triggered? Their relationships.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and a statement that I've used that helps a lot is saying, I felt triggered when, instead of they triggered me. Mm-hmm. Because when we say, I felt triggered when, now we're in control and power over. When it, they triggered me, now they, whoever they is, has the power and control over.
Yes.
So just that shift in languaging mm-hmm. changes the energy of it right there.
For sure. Well, and owning your own feelings. Nobody makes you feel a certain way. You feel a certain way that's triggered by certain situations from the past or in the moment. And so when you say you're doing this or that, you're giving whoever that is your power to heal. It's you're literally giving it away, handing it away, instead of saying, nope, I am responsible for this. It's something in me, and the experience, situation, and the words you're saying are just activating it. That way we can be in personal. I love personal responsibility. I love personal responsibility, because I think the thing is when we blame, right? When you're blaming someone, then you don't have the power anymore.
No, and I think as someone who grew up with developmental trauma. So complex PTSD and developmental trauma are interchangeable terms. And there was this lack of choice presented when you've grown up in an environment that wasn't healthy. Mm-hmm. And so when you're a child and you're growing up in, and the complex PTSD for me was emotional inconsistency in my childhood home. So there was no stability or steady ground in the emotional environment. And I write in the book how I didn't know which version of my mom I was going to get every morning. Mm-hmm. You know, and so some mornings she was cheery, she was happy. Some mornings she was already enraged. And as a child, the mother sets the energetic tone of the home. Mm-hmm. And so when there is that inconsistency, the child now has to figure out, how do I stay safe in an environment that doesn't feel safe? Mm-hmm. And so the power of choice feels taken away. Sure. And in those moments, it's recognizing when you're an adult and then you're feeling yourself triggered, you do have a choice, even when you feel like you don't have a choice.
Right.
And often in traditional trauma recovery work, the power of choice is a really big piece of the process, because you have to know that you do have the capacity to make different choices. And that no one is there in that moment powering over you. So just making that shift in saying, you know, it, I felt triggered when, means now I have choice again.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so important for people. And I remember this even with my kids, when I was raising my kids, I didn't do it so good with the first one, which is how I learned. Right. But I just remember recognizing with my older son who was diagnosed with a variety of different mental challenges and illness, that if I didn't give him a choice, if I just said, you need to clean your room right now, it was a battle. But if I would say, I need you to clean your room in the next hour, or you can clean it at 3 o'clock. Like it didn't, it's still cleaning, right? That freed him, freed me. And we didn't spend 8 hours literally in bat, like it was a battle. And I learned later, well, Dust, Sunny, you don't like to not have choices. Why would you not give them to your child? And my parent role would say, well, because I'm the parent, right? And then I'd be like, well, that's dumb because it's not working out so well for you. So I'd have all those conversations happen in my own space, in my own head too, Kate. So, you know, but I think that, you know, when we think about that choice, oh my goodness, and we always have a choice. And sometimes the choice that we make is not to choose, but that's still a choice too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and recognizing that we can choose differently again and again and again.
Yes.
That it's not a one and done. We can make choices until we figure out what's the right choice for us.
Yes. And knowing that, other people might actually struggle a bit with us changing the choices or even making choices because maybe we just wanted to get along. And so we never really even chose anything. And so we have to give grace to those that we're starting to teach and are learning based on the experiences that we are starting to recognize and doing things different. And that's not always easy either.
No, because I think there, even if it's an uncomfortable environment, making changes breaks up that the normalcy, even if the normalcy was unhealthy.
Yes.
And then when I can, like, in my own situation, I repeated some of the patterns that my mom showed when she was a younger mother. I did that with my kids until I knew better. Yeah. And so what happened though, as I started healing and shifting and changing, my kids, you could tell, were in questioning of, is this going to stay or is it going to go back to how it was? Yes. And it took 2 years of consistent changes for my kids to finally be able to settle into this new rhythm.
Yes.
And I had to be really gentle, or had to learn how to be really gentle with them in building that trust again, because they were like, well, we don't know if you're going to go back to being the mean mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so having a lot of that grace and then self-forgiveness around the repeated patterns, because you just don't know any different until you do.
Right. Right. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, I think as parents, and a lot of us, I mean, I know your children are teenagers, you're raising your children. Both of them are teenagers now. Your daughter just had a birthday.
Yep, you're in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're in it, girl. And so having kids that are raised, my kids are 24 and almost 25 and 32. And then watching the next generation, you see so many things that they are doing that you taught them to do in their younger years that now you're seeing and you're like, oh, okay, this doesn't turn out very well, by the way. But I mean, I think grandparents see that a lot, and we want to be able to change and do it different. And at the same time, they're all learning at different paces. Mm-hmm. And so we have to honor that space as well. So Kate, what would you say is for people who, because we were just talking about children, for people who have raised their kids, so they're grown, and yet they have unresolved feelings around the way they parented, like they know now what they didn't know then. Mm-hmm. What suggestions do you have to help, number one, the parent just be able to do the forgiveness and the healing for themselves? And is there something you suggest that they can do or offer to their adult children now, in retrospect, basically?
Absolutely. So first, for themselves, I think there needs to be some sort of support and acknowledgement that the way it was once said to me is, you can't teach someone Chinese if you don't know Chinese.
Exactly.
And so you can't give what you didn't have, or you can't teach what you didn't learn.
Yeah.
So, but I think there is important to have support in processing any sort of guilt or regret you might have over the ways that you parented that you wish you could have done differently. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that needs some sort of therapeutic support, whatever that looks like. There's so many different ways to do that now, whether that is a coach, a therapist, a mentor, a colleague, a pastor, whatever, mm-hmm. that helps be a neutral and empathetic sounding board for you to move. And then you do need to move the energy, right? There does need to be, as the emotions come up, a safe space for them to land. And then when it comes to your adult children or whatever age your children are, I think it's so vital to remember it is never too late for repair work. Mm-hmm. And it is something that's so important is as long as you're here and breathing, you can do repair work mm-hmm. if the other party is willing. And if they're not willing, you can still do it energetically.
Yeah.
Right? You can still write the please forgive me letters. Mm-hmm. Right? You can still do the prayer or other work that speaks to your heart on please forgive me for I'm so sorry for the ways my pain got projected onto you. Mm-hmm. Right. And as someone whose parents are alive and I have a wonderful relationship with my parents, as they saw me walk through this healing, both of them owned the way that their unprocessed pain caused my siblings and I pain. Mm-hmm. And they both have apologized to us for that.
Yeah.
And it was very humbling to receive those apologies because it made me understand they had no idea at that time. Yeah.
For sure.
They know now. They didn't know then.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I think that I know that's exactly what I did with my son when, you know, he was in his teen years was, you know, I am so sorry that I trained you to think that you were, you know, less than or whatever, and have continued when things pop up that I see or that I recognize, I just apologize and own it as soon as I'm aware of it. Because as the kids get older, you see different things that you're like, oh, he learned that from me. Oh, that was, you know, and it might not have ever shown up in any other way. But when like they start parenting, then you see some of that because they're just doing what they did. Even if they know different, they're doing what they learned. And so that's a great reminder is that for sure it's never too late. And you can write that letter and you can not send it if there's not a place to send it. So you can energetically clean your side of the street up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's important as a parent, and I'm in this with mine, like Sunny said, mine are teens and they're in their own healing journey through these things is giving them space, giving the other person, whomever that might be, space to feel what they need to feel when they're ready to feel it. Mm-hmm. But just because I might be ready to apologize and make amends and change the relationship doesn't mean the other is ready.
Yes.
And so we can't force the other to be prepared for what we're ready to do.
Yes. Because the timeline's different, right? Yeah. The timeline is different. And if you've been thinking about it for 20 years and just all of a sudden decided you're ready, they might need that amount of time to catch up. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes they do. And so that's a boundary for them in some ways, depending on the severity of the, you know, distance or separation, that could be their boundary.
Yes. And I think it's, and I bring this in because this is work that you do. It's work that I've done is when I say it's never too late, I've had clients. And then in my own life where the repair work was done with the spirit, mm-hmm. where the other has now in another realm, right? They've crossed over, they've died, they've left their human body. That doesn't mean that the repair work isn't possible.
Exactly.
I did repair work at my grandfather's gravestone. Mm-hmm. Right. And offered the forgiveness for myself so that I could forgive him. Right. There was a forgiveness exchange that happened over his grave.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's not too late.
Yeah. It's not too late. And you can just tap into their energy and be able to open yourself up and offer that. And it's all energy anyway. It doesn't matter if they have a body or not. It's still the same energy. So when, you know, in this kind of audience, we can say that, right?
Yeah.
Not in all mm-hmm. audiences, but people get that. They're like, okay, well, I'm just going to wait till they're dead. Right. So, and sometimes people feel that way. I would say it's always beneficial to do that work now because there's no reason to hold on to it for 5 or 10 or 12 more years, to then heal it if you know now.
Mm-hmm. And the forgiveness work for some is really edgy. And I think it's important to just rename that the forgiveness is for yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. I chose to forgive those that hurt me so I could be free. Yes. Because it was keeping my heart hostage to that pain. Mm-hmm. And it was a constant reminder all the time of holding onto the hate, the resentment, the bitterness was hurting my heart. And whether it was affecting them or not, still, I had no idea. It was hurting me though. And that's what mattered.
Right. Right. Well, because you're the one that's aware, right? Yeah. You have the awareness right now. So it matters to you. And I think, you know, for me, when I did my forgiveness work, and this was in my late 20s, early 30s, I had my big old long list of people I needed to forgive. And I'm like, okay, let's see, who am I going to start with? And I asked Spirit, okay, do I start with the hardest one or do I start with the easiest one? And I'll never forget, Spirit said, start with yourself. And I'm like, I wasn't on the list. I got all these other people, like, it's their faults, right? I'm like, I don't have to forgive. And then I was like, oh man. And so that's where I started, was with me. And what I discovered is once I did the forgiveness work with me, then I was like, okay, now it's time to go back. And I went back to my list. There's nobody to forgive. Because when I unwound the energy for myself and freed myself, I no longer had those feelings in each and every one of those relationships and situations.
That makes so much sense. I didn't do it that way. The self-forgiveness for me was the last part and still has its moments as I find that how my pain affected my children. And, sure. You know, when McKenna's 13, my daughter's 13, when she was 11, I will never forget, she was going through a pretty tough spot for herself and healing. And she came to me and said, Mom, I really need you to forgive yourself so that we can finally move forward. She's like, I forgave you a long time ago. I need you to forgive yourself.
Yes.
And so she was aware that that's what was hooking the energy back in, was my lack of forgiveness. Almost as if me not forgiving myself would stop me from doing those things again. Mm-hmm. And I was a completely different person. What I recognized was my lack of self-forgiveness was a form of self-punishment.
Yes.
And it was so unhealthy. Mm-hmm.
It absolutely. And it just keeps us in that sabotage. And so then it may not show up the same way. It may, you know, I might be have adjusted it here with my kids, but now it's over here in my career. Or it's over here in my finances, or it's over here in my relationship with my spouse. Or so we can redirect that energy and just continue the internal sabotage also. And so I think, yeah, self-forgiveness. You know, I had a little friends whispering in my ear, and I was very grateful to that. And that's how I learned too, that it was so much about the power that I gave, because when I looked at my list and they said, you know, forgive yourself, I was like, well, I am the common denominator in all of these. It is me. So that makes sense. I think I'll try that. And so, you know, for those of you that are struggling, it to give you, you know, two different ways, like it works either way. If you can work towards forgiving them and then forgiving yourself, you can forgive yourself and then that other piece of it's done. Whatever way you get there is okay. It's just being aware enough and intentional enough to get there.
Yes. I agree with you on that for sure.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That's awesome. Okay. So one of the things that you talked about, in your book, and, which is great, guys, by the way, so you for sure want to go to Amazon and grab her book, I'm Strong Enough Now, God, Thanks, My Journey from Trauma to Truth. And I'm going to put up her website, Kate's website, too, so you can go check her out if you want to learn more about her work and all the things that she has coming up. The body must be brought into therapy for trauma recovery. And I know how important, you know, how so many of us disassociate, disconnect, whatever term, you know, people understand it as. And so when you're talking about the body coming in and helping to have that trauma recovery, share with the audience what that means to you and what that might look like, Kate.
So it's known in trauma work now, thankfully, because of the past decade of neuroscience research, that you can't resolve trauma at the level of the mind. And I use a metaphor, like your body is like the cloud everything is stored there, whether you know it's there or not.
Mm-hmm. Right? Whether you can see it or
whether you can see it, whether you know, right? You think you got rid of it, but it's in the cloud. Right. And so what happens is in traditional forms of like talk therapy per se, we can talk about the problem, we can talk about the emotion, we can talk about the story, but it doesn't resolve it. It actually can perpetuate the trauma. But when we drop into what I call the felt sense of the body, right, the sensational experiences that emotions create. So when someone suffers from anxiety, they can label a variety of sensations that their body presents with. Mm-hmm. And any of those sensations, the racing heart, the sweaty palms, the feeling of the throat closing up, right, the tension in the shoulders, those are all somatic, meaning body-based entry points to resolve the trauma. Mm-hmm. And so it could be as simple as a hand goes on the heart and I'm acknowledging and aware that this is being activated. And then maybe I need to let that part of me have a voice. You know, if 8-year-old me had something it needed to say, what would that have been? Mm-hmm. You know, and we allow the body to speak. Another way, and one of the ways that I use as a yoga therapist, is we'll put the body in a yoga posture that opens up the energy. Mm-hmm. And then we just breathe. You don't even have to talk.
Yeah.
You just open the body and we allow the breath to start moving and it does it for you.
To let it out. So it's actually able to moving it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's clearing and moving. And if you think of like a hairball clogged in a drain, the hairball's finally out, right? Yeah. It's clearing. And oftentimes that comes through tears. Sometimes it comes through coughing. Sometimes there is a little bit of a, you know, anger release piece that happens because it's just been stuck for a long time. Yeah. But first and foremost is having to create a relationship with the body that feels safe. Because if someone doesn't feel like their body is a safe place to be, they can't do the body-based work yet. So there's a lot of time spent in recreating a relationship with the body of one of safety. And that has to happen before this old energy can move. Otherwise, the dissociation or disconnection keeps occurring.
Sure, sure. So if people wanted, if they were like, okay, I get that and I hear that. And so what's one step that I could take to create a safer environment in my body? What would that be?
The first thing I started doing is a gratitude body scan. Right. And so on my website, there's a free download for a gratitude body scan. So people can go there to the shop tab and there is a gratitude body scan download. There's a few free meditation downloads. That's the one I would start with because it starts to rewire the relationship with your body as one of safety and gratefulness instead of something that's trying to hurt you. Mm-hmm. When there's a lot of trauma in the body, people are afraid of their own sensations.
Yeah.
They're afraid of feeling that. And it's very real. And it's what causes people not to overcome a lot of their past. So learning how to be in relationship with the body. I'm grateful for my toes, right? I'm grateful for my feet. It's really simple and it starts to rewire the nervous system. Gratitude, we all know scientifically, is a great energetic hack on our brain and on our heart.
Sure.
So it's one of those where you might not believe it at first. Right? And as you start practicing it, your body naturally knows its original design, which was love. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all this pain.
Sure.
And so it's bringing you back to that original design that you were meant to live in.
And that can be uncomfortable initially because you're not used to it, because you don't know what it feels like to be in just that. You don't remember that love energy necessarily consciously. Yet I think that most of us have an understanding that we come from that place and we're meant to be at ease. And one of the things I just want to validate for those of you that have been following my work or done any of my work is I use a little bit different language, but it's the same exact thing in connection with being the best friend to your body and learning how to honor and love your body and be your own best friend. So maybe in the way that we're talking about it, it's the trauma that the body's carried. And it can also be the way that we've perceived the body and the trauma that we have put the body through by our judgments, our criticisms, our mean words, our critical thoughts. And so I do the exact same visualization and meditation. Body appreciation is what I call it. and you start at your toes and thank you for my toes. I appreciate that they help balance my body. Thank you for my feet. And so moving all the way up. And so it helps you to appreciate the functionality of the body instead of the physicality, like the way it looks for those that might have internalized that piece as well. So you're like checking off all kinds of things all at once with that one meditation.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And it's, I remember reading, you guys heard in my bio, I'm a neuroscience geek. I love it. And one of the things that really helped me understand and stop blaming my body was that those of you that have a tendency to dissociate and disconnect, and I used to have a PhD in it, right? So I was the queen of dissociation. And it's a survival technique to save yourself in that moment. Mm-hmm. And when I remember reading in Polyvagal Theory by Stephen Porges, his work that says the greatest heroism act you ever did was dissociating. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it changes our perception of why couldn't I fight back? Why couldn't I protect myself? Why did I just lay there and allow this to happen? Right? In my book, I have a lot of what people call big T traumas, as well as the underlying pieces. It was because the body is always trying to save itself. It's always trying to save you and protect you. And it will hold that pain so that you don't have to experience it until you have the resource available to then process it out. Right. It has its own intelligence in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if we can love it and appreciate it and honor it and recognize that it is safe and that it was the experiences and the way we experience them, the way we internalized them, the way we perceive them based on what was happening, like all of those pieces play into that piece, but the body was always and is meant to protect the spirit. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the body is the vehicle.
Yes.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
And I know you talked to this and I'm sure people are hearing, you know, there's that, well, why can't I just let it go? Mm-hmm. Cause I get that a lot from people. It's like, well, why can't I just let it go? And I would invite you, if that's something you struggle with, to inquire, what emotion is standing in the way of me being able to let it go? Mm-hmm. And the other piece behind that, and I speak to this in the book, is a statement called post-secondary gain. And it's, what am I gaining from holding on to it?
Yes.
Right? So with this forgiveness thing we were talking about, what was I gaining from holding on to not forgiving myself? Mm-hmm. I had this belief that if I forgave myself, I might do the same thing again. So the gain was protection over repeating unhealthy patterns. What I wasn't doing was giving myself the credit that I'm not the same person that I was then.
Sure. Sure.
And I don't need that to stop me from doing something unhealthy again. Mm-hmm. So there's always a gain that's being given when we're gripping to a story or to a memory that we don't want to let go of.
And it could be as simple as, I get to be the victim. Like I get to feel like other people have power over me and it can be expressed that way as well. Right. It can be a variety of different that you would say, well, no, I don't want to be a victim, but okay. But that's what created a story that made it safer to be that than to be maybe the person in power, you know? And so there's so many ways that we create. I mean, the mind is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories we tell and then the way that the body works. It's a fascinating, fascinating area. So your book talks a lot about it. Strong enough now. I'm strong enough now. God, thanks. My journey from trauma to truth. One of the things that you talked about, and I would love for you to share this and we'll end the conversation with this, is circular breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would love for you to just share why that's important, how people can do it, and when they would use it.
Okay. So circular breathing is also called conscious connected breathing, and it mimics the energy of the ocean within us. So we're made up of mostly water, and water is meant to move and flow, right? And our energy body in the yogic teachings is the easiest way to change energy. And the energy body is the element of water. And so when we're breathing in this way, and if you imagine the ocean and the wave pulls back and it crests over and then returns back from where it came. So our breath, we want to move in that same circular rhythm, right? And there's never a moment on the ocean where there's not a wave, whether it's a subtle wave or huge wave, it's always flowing. Right? And the ocean doesn't judge the size of its wave. and it doesn't care what it looks like. Mm-hmm. It's just waiting for it to come home. So there's a homecoming energy to this breath. We're coming home to ourselves within our own heart. So the breath can have an audible sound like an ocean wave. And you want to imagine it starting at your feet. And as you inhale, it breathes up through the back body. It crests at the crown. And then as you exhale, it washes down through the front body and returns back to the earth. So that circle is just mimicking this energy that's constantly moving through us. When you first start it, there's all different kinds of experiences people can have. So I recommend always starting it at home. And maybe you do it for 2 to 3 minutes, set a timer on your phone. Okay. And you're breathing, and it can sound like this. It can sound like, and it can be open mouth, which activates your sympathetic nervous system, which is going to move energy. Or it can be through the nose, which is going to activate more of your parasympathetic nervous system, which is going to calm energy. So you can kind of decide for yourself what you need.
If you're tired at that time.
Yeah, at that time. If you're tired and you're like, oh, I'm going to do it with open mouth and activate and get some more energy moving, or I'm feeling a little anxious, I'm going to do it through my nose and I'm going to calm my nervous system down. And there's a rhythm. Like, you might even find your body starts kind of going like it's on a wave, like it's moving. Yeah. And the circle's important. There's no pause at the top of the inhale or bottom of the exhale. Mm-hmm. We just want to keep the energy flowing. So when I find myself in a stressful situation, this immediately activates because it's telling my body I don't have to get stuck. Mm-hmm. Because when our breath gets stuck, our energy gets stuck.
And when we stop the breath, So that's the importance of keeping the flow of it.
Keeping it moving. When we had those unprocessed emotional experiences, our breath stopped. Mm-hmm. Right. And so just by keeping the breath flowing, we're teaching ourselves a new way to be, a new way to show up. And the breath is always with you. You never have to worry if it's going to be there in that moment, so long as you're alive. Right. And so as you get used to this, do it for up to 10 minutes. And I do this in the car. I have people now that do this all the time. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it just is a rhythmic relaxation. People have insomnia. They fall asleep to it. They don't have insomnia anymore. Mm-hmm. So think of like just that gentle rocking that our nervous system needs to soothe and regulate itself.
Sure. Beautiful. And as long as you have breath, you can use it. Because when you don't have breath, you don't need it anymore.
Yep.
It's a great thing. It's a great thing. All right. Kate, so they can find you at kateship.com. Mm-hmm. They can go to Amazon and grab your book, I'm Strong Enough Now, God. Thanks, My Journey from Trauma to Truth. And I'm sure you have your events and all your good stuff, all your offerings and everything that you do is on your page.
Yes.
Do you do private sessions if people are interested in something like that, or
I
mentoring?
Do private sessions, and you can put, there's a contact form on the page under the private sessions if that's something you're interested with. I do group mentoring. I also teach trauma training. If any of you are practitioners and want to learn a trauma recovery method, I have that coming up starting in October this year.
Beautiful. Awesome. All right. Awesome. Okay, Kate. So now we go to some of the off the cuff parts of things. So this is just going to be, we're just going to learn some fun things about Kate.
All right. Okay?
Mm-hmm. First, in the past year, what is one thing that you have bought that you just really feel like you can't live without?
Oh my goodness.
That you just absolutely love that you can't live without.
Is it allowed to be a...
It can be anything, girl. I'm open.
My dog, Willow.
All right. That's a great one.
I'm an animal lover. And so I have two dogs. And Willow was... We thought we were going to get another dog, and we chose her. And she has brought so much joy and also grounded feminine energy into this home, too. So my dog, absolutely.
That's a great one. I love it. We've never had somebody say their pet. Oh, so that's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. What was your first job?
This is funny. I worked as a soda girl at an old pharmacy in the town I grew up in. So I would make all of like the old fountain sundaes, and I would sell lottery tickets. And we learned the lottery system enough that we knew which ticket to pull from the scratchers. And so after school, a couple of days a week, there were elderly people that I served, and they would come in for their banana split Sundays. And I learned how to make all the different types of soda fountain things.
Okay. I love it. Well, that's kind of like mine. I you know, ran a shake shop, and that was what we did too. We made all the, it was my family's restaurant, but it was all, you know, burgers, fries, and shakes. It's called Sunny's, the ultimate shake. So, so I get that.
That's great.
Little town.
Little suburb.
Mm-hmm. In what little town?
It was Deerfield, Illinois. Tiny suburb north of Chicago.
Deerfield, Illinois. Okay. All right. When you were young, what did you want to be?
A horse trainer.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you still have a passion for horses?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Just don't need to train them? You just like to be with them?
I don't need to train them. I have friends that do that. I just get to enjoy their trained horses.
Yes. I get that. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you could have a billboard anywhere in the world, where would you have it and what would it say?
Wow. That's a really interesting question. I'm going to go with what my first spirit love answer was. I would have the billboard in the Scottish Highlands, which there probably are no billboards there. And I've never been there.
But there's people, probably.
And I think it would probably say, sit down and be quiet. It gets still.
Okay. I like that one.
That's what I keep seeing. It's so funny. I'm like, wow, that is not what my humanness would say.
Well, I like it then. We always want to go with that one. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite number?
27.
Why is that?
I have no idea. It just has always been my favorite number.
Huh. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Always.
It's one of mine too.
Okay. Well, I don't know why that. I'm not surprised by that. Sorry.
Okay. And what is the, well, are you a rule follower? Rule
no.
follower or a rebel or somewhere in between?
I think it depends on the area of my life. Okay. I think if I leaned one way, it would be more rebellious than rule follower.
Okay. Right. And does that have to do with wanting to break new ground, create new awareness, help people to see things that maybe they don't see otherwise?
Yes. I think in my heart, I am a rebel. I think in my head, I become a rule follower because that helped me stay safe at times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a great answer. Okay. And what is your favorite meal?
Hi, you'll love this. So if I could have any meal, it would be crab legs, but I think I'm allergic. So I haven't had it in like 7 years.
Oh,
because I used to eat crab, and then I was eating crab or shrimp, but I started feeling my throat get really funny and I haven't had it since. So I actually told my husband recently, you guys will laugh at me, is I'm like, when I'm on my deathbed, I want crab legs. And if I don't die, I'm coming back. So my friends are like, we have EpiPens. You want to try? I'm like, I don't know if I'm at that point yet.
So one day, just out of the blue, one day I had pineapple, and I used to eat pineapple a lot. And I had a pina colada. I was on the East Coast. We had just finished the book tour. So this was like 11 years ago, and we had a pina colada and it had real pineapple in it. No reason not to drink it, because I always ate pineapple. And as I was drinking it, same thing, my throat, my tongue, my mouth. And I was like, that's weird, but I didn't even think about it. So then a month later, we go to Mimi's Cafe and we eat. They have the little carrot bread, like kind of breads that they bring out at the beginning. And I ate one of those carrot breads and two bites of it. And my throat starts swelling up so fast. My husband ran to Sprouts across the street and bought not Benadryl, but something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I just all of a sudden had a pineapple allergy. And that pissed me off. I'm like, I don't want to have a pineapple allergy. I don't know where it came from. I don't know why it's there. What's the emotion behind it? Like, I did all the things, right? And so for about 3 years, maybe even 4 years, I avoided pineapple. And every time it was around me, like if I saw a can of pineapple, my throat would close up and my mouth would start just seeing it. And yeah. So I'm like, that's so fascinating. Isn't that so fascinating so that fascinating. Our bodies do mm-hmm. that, right? So finally, I was like, all right, listen, body, I'm done doing this. I'm going to eat pineapple and you're going to have to, like, I really had this conversation. You're going to have to accept it. And I did. I ate some pineapple and I had a little teeny bit of tingliness, but it wasn't bad. And I had a antihistamine just in case. Uh-huh. And then the next time I just like a month later, I ate a little bit more. And then a month later, a little bit more. I can eat pineapple
and you're
now.
Good. Mm-hmm. All right.
So I don't want you to try it because I said that, because I don't want your death to be on my hands. However, I'm just saying, I know how that is where you're just like all of a sudden, like
all of a sudden. Yeah, it was. And so I might go with the EpiPen or a bottle of Benadryl option.
And then try it because you love it. Because if you don't.
And I can handle shrimp. Like I can. My family loves shrimp and stuff, and I don't have an issue being around it. And so even handling it doesn't create that. And, but it was also at the time where I had so much anxiety every day that I have no idea if it was the crab or the sensations of anxiety.
All right. Well, in a safe environment, I think you ought to try it again.
Okay.
And then, let us know how it goes. All right, friend. So last thing, anything you'd like to share with the audience as you leave, any message, last parting words?
I think the greatest message is to always, always hold on to hope, you guys, that there's hope for healing always. And that when something doesn't work, don't give up on thinking something else won't work. So being able to keep trying things until you find what works for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because everything works for someone. It's just figuring out what that is for you at that time, because it's all, there's so many different, it's like diets. People be like, well, that diet didn't work for me and that, but it worked for somebody at some point. So it's just finding what's going to work for you and just being persistent enough to know you're worth it.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. All right, my friend. Thank you so much. Thanks everybody for joining us. Again, go see KateShipp.com. Go check her out and check out everything she has available there, and go grab her book on Amazon. All right. Have a great one. Thanks, friends.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to Off the Cuff with SDJ. If you gained some knowledge, if you felt a connection, if you got some ahas or insight into this thing we call life, if you feel like you're a little more elevated than you were before you listened to this podcast, then please subscribe to this podcast. And if you're already signed up, please rate and review it. I'd greatly appreciate it. If you want to get more information about me and what I have to offer, go to my website, sunnydonjohnston.com. Thanks so much, my friend, and I hope to see you next week.